Hey, thank you for listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. You can listen anytime because we are always online at npr.org. Jacob, I need my music. Pretty lonely in the studio. You know I got the blues. Time to talk about all the stories emailed by all yous. Ain't got no Rachel. Ain't got no co-host. Coming here, people. Let's do the doggone most.
Very nice.
Thank you very much. My blues, actually written by Ian Chillag. Right.
No. I really don't want credit for that.
I put my heart into that for you, Ian. Yeah. Trisha, what do you have? Your microphone's not on,
my
Trisha.
Soul. Okay.
Oh, there you go.
So I have one of the most emailed stories on USA Today, and poor Jacob, the director's packing up along. Get better, Jacob. Okay,
oh,
he's coming
guy.
Back in. All right. So one of the most emailed stories on USA Today, police say rosaries are the newest gang symbol. And this is actually police in a town in Oregon where there's a situation in a high school, a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old student. Two students were suspended from school for refusing to remove the rosaries they were carrying. The school said the rosaries were gang-related. The students said no, they were actually just carrying those necklaces around because they reminded them of their mothers. So I really had never heard that rosaries were being used as a gang symbol, but apparently they've been used in that manner before. I think it's a way to carry your gang colors without, and then having kind of an excuse,
having
a religious
a cover.
Excuse to do it. So it's apparently not new, but it's new in this community, and the Portland Archdiocese says they've never heard of reports of people using rosaries this way, but local police say, yeah, it's kind of been around and it's moving into this town, so I think it's quite interesting.
There you go. Number four most emailed from USA Today. Ian, where is your most emailed from?
This is the number one most emailed from the LA Times. The headline, Sean Diddy Combs knew of Tupac attack. Kind of a no-brainer why this is ending up the most emailed. Tupac Shakur was murdered in 1996, but in 1994, right here in New York, he was attacked and shot five times. And a new investigative report from the LA Times shows some FBI documents that are saying that both Sean Combs, formerly Puff Daddy,
P. Diddy,
any number of names, and the notorious B.I.G., Christopher Wallace, weren't involved in the attack, but these reports are saying they did know that it was going to happen in advance, and all sorts of stuff coming out in these FBI reports.
That's one of those crimes that has never really been put to bed.
Right.
There's a really
right.
good documentary a woman I used to work with made about the death and the investigation around Tupac Shakur. And it's just those questions have never quite been answered.
Yeah, Tupac, claimed that it was Diddy and B.I.G. that were involved, people said no, that's really not the case, and it turns out it may have been people that were connected to them that wanted to curry favor with them, and it's very interesting.
That's number one most emailed at the LA Times. Caitlin Kenny.
I have the most emailed from the Boston Globe, and it's about the number of pubs that are closing on Dorchester Ave, to people who live in Boston.
Dorchester.
Or
Dorchester. Yeah,
exactly. I'm not going to try to think of it, but it's there. The Terra, Mickey's, the Irish Roller, Foley's Tavern, and many others are disappearing. A lot of the reasons is that they say a lot of the Irish population is moving out to the suburbs. Also, the price of getting a liquor license is getting really high. It could be as much as about $50,000 to $100,000. So a lot of these old rough-and-tumble Irish-style pubs are being replaced by new chic bars. For example, this place that was Ned Kelly's and later PJ Quinn's is now called D-Bar, and it's a popular place for the gay community. They serve beet and arugula salads and pear martinis, so that's quite a shift from
that
a Guinness
so
and
Irish
some,
pub.
And some, some Irish soda bread. Yeah, well, times are changing.
And Caitlin, they had record turnout at the South Boston or Southeast St. Patrick's Day Parade over the weekend, which I've been there.
I've been.
It's the best parade I ever went to in my life.
It's amazing.
You had
like
fun?
It's like a combination St. Patrick's Day Parade / Southie Pride Day Parade.
Oh, boy.
And, Southie Pride is strong.
Yes. The neighborhood comes out.
Yes.
Yes.
My most is most emailed from the Wall Street Journal. It's about number four. And the title of it is Men Go For It by Any Name Besides Girdle. Shapewear sounds better to a vain guy, Mr. Verdi in a bind. We'll tell you about Mr. Verdi in a minute. It's an article by a woman reporter saying about how men are getting more into this shapewear. That's what they started calling girdles, basically. Girls know about it. You wear this thing. You buy Spanx.
Spanx for men? Is that
Yeah, it's kind of Spanx for men. Spanx are sort of like pantyhose, but they kind of squish everything in and you can give you a better waist. Well, apparently men want to squish everything in and have a better waist too. Saks started carrying a new line from To Exist. Some men actually claim that they have been doing it themselves on the sly. Robert Verdi, who's a stylist, he said he began craving a so-called Myrtle man girdle after starting to develop a muffin top as he turned and came to his 40s. He said, I'm at that weird age where I'm starting to have a little bit of spare tire, the midsection squish. Now, in the business world, they're saying the big issue with it is marketing. You just can't market it to guys as girdles. You have to use words like problem solver, refining trouble spots, support boxers, compression shorts.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
So if you hear all of these things, and they also blame it on a lot of the Euro trends in suits being so slimly cut
right.
that many need to squish
Yeah,
them.
I need adjustability.
There you go.
You need versatility, you know, big meal. You need to be able to adjust on the fly.
All right. All right, Dan, you're next.
I've got a most popular from Reuters here, Allie. It's a headline, Honey, Will You Marry? Oh, never mind.
That's a good headline.
This is the story of a young man, 28-year-old Left Coast Haji of London, who was all ready to propose to his sweetheart, Leanne, and he had a unique way to propose for her. He bought a $12,000 engagement ring and hid it inside a helium balloon.
Oh, I heard the story.
And he was going to have her pop the balloon as he popped the question, and the ring would pop out, they would be happy forever after. And the balloon, a gust of wind came, and it pulled the balloon out of his hand before he proposed, and the helium balloon with the ring inside blew away, and it is gone missing.
That's so sad.
So he is obviously crestfallen. And what I find, though, a little bit disturbing / upsetting is this woman, Leanne, she's really upset with him. He says she went absolutely mad. Now she's refusing to speak to me until I get her a new ring.
Oh,
ouch!
You know,
I'd put her in a helium balloon. So what's up with
that? He may thank that balloon one day.
Yeah, really.
Seriously,
that sounds like one of those life-defining moments.
No, seriously.
And Sharon Hoffman, our executive producer, in the studio today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have the most emailed, the number one most emailed story from NPR.org. This is this, I believe, from All Things Considered last week. It's about the parrot. The parrot, a parrot that is owned by Julie Zickfus. When I used to go to Florida with my parents, we went to this hotel where they had parrots in the lobby, and I used to say, oh, can we get a parrot at home? My mom said, no. They make a huge mess. They talk too much, and you can't do it. And now, all these years later, I know why.
As I write, the emerald green head of a macaw emerges from under my desk. He has crawled up my leg from a favorite perch on my foot. He's been doing this for 21 years, and I expect him to be sitting on me, giving creaky calls and showering me with feather dandruff for at least the next 21. He's the relationship I can't get out of. I bought this parrot in 1986, the first time my biological clock rang. I needed something young and helpless to care for. It was one of the moments in my life when a crystal ball might have been helpful. To look forward 21 years and see myself still fixing a hot breakfast every morning for a bird. To see that sweet, cooing baby parrot morph into a crotchety tyrant, not averse to sinking his powerful beak into flesh to make a point. And yet, Charlie speaks a few words. He has a flair for slapstick. In the company of people, he listens to the conversation and laughs loudly at precisely the right moment. The bare skin on his cheeks is soft and warm. He likes to be hugged. A captive parrot selects the only mate it can find. In this case, Charlie's picked me. But I just refuse to follow the plan he's laid out. I share my affections with another of my own species, even when Charles punctures my skin to prevent this perceived infidelity. I won't eat the breakfast he regurgitates, no matter how tenderly proferred. Occasional furtive copulations with my sock-clad foot net him nothing but a temporary release. He points out and protects his chosen nest site, a grotto under the sink, with cracked squawks and sudden rushes at passers-by. But I can't succumb to his will, crawl under the sink, and lay the two round white eggs that Charlie believes I must have in me, that he so longs to incubate and protect. He crouches in the half-darkness, looking up at me with a Don King wig of feathers over crazed golden eyes. Come on in, baby. You know you're ovulating. Every once in a while, I look down on myself, a middle-aged woman with a middle-aged parrot dropping dandruff and worse on her shoulder. Sometimes, after he's perforated my finger or lip in a fit of pique, it occurs to me that I might just surrender Charles to a parrot rescue group. Just as quickly, I discard the idea. Who am I to dump this slightly mad bundle of idiosyncrasies and multicolored feathers onto anyone else? We have a history together, forged in stone on that fateful December day in 1986, when I gathered a baby macaw in my arms and said, I do. Parrots can be delightful, but they are raunchy, awful pets. I'll probably be an old, old lady before I figure out what has kept me and Charlie together all these years. And I'm sure Charlie, that tatty old rotter, will be sitting on my shoulder when I do. Maybe it's love, but it feels a little more like marriage.
An ode to Charlie. That was NPR commentator Julie Sikafoos with the most emailed story at npr.org right now.